Welcome to another episode of The Antique Vintager, where each episode, Jeff Eller, The Antique Vintager, discusses vintage items from jewelry, watches, art, and items of vertu in relationship to the times they were made, incorporating history and items in a fascinating way. Remember, just because it's old doesn't make it valuable. Now, here are your hosts, Jeff and Ann Eller.
Oh, that is so true, and it is so good to have Jeff back on the air with us, the Antique Vintager. And you know, Jeff, one of the phrases that it says in your little intro is, just because it's old doesn't make it valuable. How true is that?
But the same as it is for people, Ann.
Go. I guess you're right. But that is true. Lots of people come in here at the Antique Vintager Emporium, and they always think, oh my God, it's old. It's got to be valuable.
Yeah. I mean, everything from kitchenware to nails.
Yeah.
This nail's square. It's got to be valuable. No.
Well, that even goes for coins, right?
Oh,
I mean,
yeah.
All the time people come in and they think, oh my God, I've got a penny from 1932. It's got to be valuable.
Right. I mean, we get coins is one of the things. The blue boy and the pink lady pictures is another thing. I mean, it leads to total surprise of what people have been misled is valuable. Milk bottles, that's another one. Yeah, there are some that have some value, but very few.
That is true. Well, you know, before we get started, we're going to be talking about, I understand, watches and pearls today.
Watches and pearls.
That's right. But before we actually get started with that, I just wanted to, since you were on the phone Saturday when we did this virtual train ride around the world, what did you think and what did the people think that you had calling in on?
Well, the people just were clamoring to be on and to recognize that they had some input to be on and that they were listening and hearing things and people that they didn't believe they would ever experience off of a radio station here in the United States.
That's right. Right here in Greenwood, South Carolina. You know, I know one of the thrills for you was we did a special commercial about buying. And we did it specifically because we knew we'd have listeners in England. And what happened?
I got two calls, one from Cornwall, and it was on the basis of that after 140 years, this business is closing. They have sold their building. In Cornwall, England.
Right.
That they had sold their building, and they were going to liquidate their inventory.
And they were interested because they were listening to the show.
That's right. They couldn't believe it. I think that we need to, for pickup advertisers, was pick up some of our ones that solicit businesses and things. So, my gosh, you know, we had two calls off of the very first time we ever did it.
That's right. So that was pretty awesome.
That was tremendously awesome.
And you've actually talked to them since then.
Yes.
So trying to work out how you could do this. I don't know whether a trip to jolly old England is in the future or not there, Jeff.
It definitely is.
Okay.
I mean, both places were unique. One is basically silver. Candlesticks going back to the 1680s.
Wow.
Yeah. It was a fabulous inventory. And they're having the same problem we are, I mean, with the aspect of millennials not wanting anything of a product to inherit. They want to essentially give me the cash.
Right. And that's, of course, one of the things that you as a vintager right here in Greenwood, South Carolina, USA, deal with all the time.
I don't think there's a week that goes by that we haven't had somebody in that inherited something very, very nice, very, very beautiful, and just wanted cash.
That's so sad.
I'm pretty upset over a couple of them.
Yeah. You know,
I knew the people that left it to them and how they prized the fact they were leaving it.
Right. You know, one of my favorite stories from years and years and years ago on the bypass there with Sharp Facets was a girl that came in with, what did she have, a bar pin?
Oh, you mean the Art Deco bar pin with the sapphires and diamonds.
Right.
Right.
And she wanted you to melt it down and make a nugget out of it.
That's true.
And you wouldn't do it.
I tried to explain to her what she had as an heirloom piece, and there would be nothing ever made out of it as valuable as it was, as is. And it was so beautiful to begin with.
And she didn't care.
Nope. She just wanted a nugget.
That was back when nuggets were popular, so you know that was a long time ago. So then what happened?
She got somebody else to make it into a nugget and came back by and told me how arrogantly rude I was that I wouldn't make it for her, and she'd got it done. And she had to show it to me, and I was thinking, what you just blew was several thousand dollars into something that's just scrap, and at the most is a couple 300.
That's right. So, you know, that's why Jeff is so good at what he does. Number one, just because you want it melted down, he's not necessarily going to do it. Even if he'd love to have it, he'll tell you the way it really should be. If you are in the mood to sell, well, he'll buy from you, that's for sure. But he does try to tell you the different values, and I think that's invaluable. Unlike places that their whole business is just to buy, right?
Their whole business is to buy, and they work on an entirely different philosophy. I mean, that is basically, if we buy it, we're going to sell it in one day, and it's going to be sold to be melted down.
That's their philosophy.
Right.
The other people's buying, yes.
Right.
Yes.
There's nothing wrong with that. As a business model, it's perfectly acceptable.
Sure.
Just not ours.
That's right. You're going to try to market it and get more for it so you can give people more for their pieces.
Yeah, I think there's an element of pride within these pieces that people bring in. I mean, there's plenty of pure junk that goes right to the pot. But
broken
the
chains,
fine
yeah.
filigree, the fine design, no.
Yeah.
And those, we pay more for it.
And those things are to be treasured. And if they're not a treasure to you, they will become a treasure to somebody else.
That's my philosophy.
Yes, that's true. So one of the things that I know that you are very fond of are pocket watches. I mean, Lord knows, I've got so many pocket watches to put up on the web and everything. But what do you find most interesting about pocket watches? What should the people know?
The people should know that the technology that was used to develop pocket watches is still extant today. We use it almost in everything that we have that's mechanical. The machinery that made the gears, that made the stems, that made the cases are still doing the exact same things now on a higher level and more automated. But the exact same things are still being done today. For instance, the United States became a technology leader in the second half of the 19th century. That's starting about 1850 and really culminating in the 1890s. Almost a third of our labor force, skilled labor force, was involved with the watch industry one way or the other. All the way from plating, metal rolling, to cutting gears, to assembly, to timing, to developing new product, technology led. And technology of the watch industry was found in things like adding machines, cash registers.
Typewriters.
It was almost unending, and they wouldn't have been there without the development of the watch industry and the requirements that they developed for producing mass-produced watches, quality mass-produced watches.
But still, when you're talking mass-produced watches, you're talking so much smaller quantities than what we think of as mass-produced today. Like Timex, you know, you think of mass-produced Timex, right?
Well, Timex was mass-produced, but in the top years for Elgin, they were producing a million-plus watches.
Really?
They weren't just selling them here. We sold watches to Europe instead of the other way around. To the Orient, one of our biggest customers was China.
What's happened? What's happened? Now we're an importer of Chinese goods, and we don't sell that much over there that they would like to buy. So, but then we did, huh?
Oh, my gosh. the amount of watches that went to China, especially from about 1895 to 1920, was about a third of the watches produced.
Wow.
When I say China, I should add India in there, too. And India as a nation encompassed Afghanistan, Pakistan, anything with the word stand in it was part of India, including Burma.
So it was a huge territory.
Huge territory, and the English bought rights to sell Waltham or Elgin or any of the outstanding brands that were extant at that time. They provided the repair facilities. They did the training. They taught people how to be watchmakers. Hong Kong became known as a port where you could buy all the brands of watches from around the world.
And interesting to note, didn't we have an Elgin factory in Elgin, South Carolina?
We had an Elgin factory in the 1960s in Elgin, South Carolina. Matter of fact, I forgot the name of the town, what it was before it was Elgin. They changed their name to Elgin to get the factory.
That tells you South Carolina will do whatever it takes. You want a name? We'll change our name.
Yeah.
That was huge.
Yeah, it was huge. And at the same time, they set up a factory in France. And the French Elgins are a very high collectible.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's very cool.
Now, in the scheme of things, where does a pocket watch fall as far as watches, wrist watches, pocket watches, hand-carried watches, clocks?
Well, here's the way to look at it. It wasn't until 1960... December 1960, that the production of pocket watches was less than of wrist watches. And that's all wrist watches.
Wow. Ladies and men?
Yep. It was right up to 1960 that pocket watches were ahead. My father didn't wear a wrist watch until the 70s.
Hmm.
Yeah. My grandfather never wore a wristwatch.
Wow. And so the pocket watches were the rigueur. That's what you wanted.
Well, it's like anything else that's a status symbol. A pocket watch was immediately identifiable as to its quality and status with people that knew. And people were as fashion conscious then as they are today.
Now, what about the railroad watches? Because everybody always talks about a railroad watch. And, of course, with the railroads running right here, Greenwood, Abbeville, and whatnot, that's always been a big deal.
The watch inspectors were located right here in Abbeville.
The watch inspectors?
Watch inspectors.
For the railroad?
For the railroad.
Okay.
They would time your watch out, and it had to be within, 12 seconds a day. And they could adjust it right there at their site. They were a miniature little factory, really. They could repair, adjust, whatever.
It is interesting to note that watches do have a slight adjustment on them, that they can be adjusted for fast or slow.
Absolutely. That was a unique thing that they made for American watches, American distributors made. They made it friendly to the watchmaker.
Hmm.
So if you have a watch that you can repair or clean or whatever in a matter of an hour versus a European watch that takes all day, what are you going to push? You're going to push the American technology.
Sure.
And that's what it was. And that was the 1900s, early 1900s, right up again through 1960. The last railroad watches were up in the mid-80s.
Wow.
Yeah, not that long ago.
Well, I can remember when we came to Greenwood, how they had the... we used to get the railroad guys would come by to see you with the rocks and all this kind of stuff, and they were being transported around by the cabs or whatever for the railroad. That was still very, very big business.
Well, the railroads actually were a culmination of accuracy that was demanded for a production entity, the production entity being the railroads. It made them on time.
You know, one of the things that I found real interesting going to the present here, Jeff, is they're talking about doing away with or keeping daylight saving times year round here in South Carolina. And one of the things that's been mentioned is that they have to get this approved by the federal government. And I was asking you about it, and you said, well, that's right. And why was that?
Because they have to be able to time airport schedules, railroad times, docking times, all the way down to basic satellite times when a satellite will pass over a certain area.
So you can't just have one state on daylight savings time and another one on standard time. It would create havoc in the transportation business.
Right. And everybody uses computers now, and it would be simpler with computers, but it's not simpler for the guy that's operating that piece of machinery.
Absolutely. Well, that's just some interesting points. You know, we only have three or four minutes before we're going to hear the news, then we're going to come back. What point would you like to cover?
I'd like to cover the fact that they're the affordable heirloom.
Affordable heirloom.
The money it would take to duplicate a let's say, Elgin 23 jewel, 21 jewel, 17 jewel pocket watch is over $1,000.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, the accuracy.
To duplicate it in today's dollars on today's market.
Right.
Yes.
And the accuracy and the polish and the hand assembly, well over $1,000.
Basically, because we want to do everything by machines now rather than by handwork.
Right, and the tolerances aren't necessarily as good as what people think they are on the modern things. And the fact is that that watch can last you 100 years. So it's an automatic heirloom for people. And you're buying it for cents on the dollar. A watch that, if it was built today, it was $1,400 or $1,500. You can buy from 1900, 1906, 1920s for around $200 to $300.
Wow.
In super condition.
That is affordable. So that is a very, very good thing. Plus, the thing about those watches is they don't need a battery.
Nope, don't need a battery.
They are truly green, Ocasio-Cortez.
Yep. Yeah, actually, she was pushing something like that. She had the automatic mixer and had the little hand crank mixer.
Right.
What's the difference? Yeah. I'm thinking, well, that's not an argument you're going to win.
No, that's not. But the very fact that they are green and all you have to do is wind them. You know, you don't know how many people come in here, Jeff, that over the years that we've been in business, they bring in a watch and they go, I think it needs a new battery. And you look at it and it just needs to be wound.
Everyone, it seems like that they inherit, they'll say, it worked for my aunt. It worked for my grandmother. It worked for my mother. She wore it all the time. I put it on, and the battery's gone dead. Well, the fact of the matter is, They didn't know that you had to wind it.
Yeah, that's right. So having a watch that is a wind-up really is a it's cost-saving.
Easy
to operate. And the thing about a watch like that, it can be repaired. Now, it is hard to find a watchmaker sometimes. That's a key, too.
Yeah, we're fortunate, and we have one.
Yes. But if you have a treasured piece, whether it be a watch or it be a pocket watch, when we come back, we're going to be talking more about pocket watches, more about what a great gift they are for a wedding gift, groom's gift, anniversary, or retirement gift. They were always the rigueur. We're going to talk more about that when we come back. So I hope you're going to stay right with us here on WCRS right here in Greenwood, South Carolina. Make sure you stay tuned. We'll be back. Hey, I'm with the vintager himself, Jeff Eller, and I'm Ann. We'll be back. The antique vintager has arrived in Greenwood. He's been in Greenwood, but he's been incognito. Now unveiled for the very first time, the antique vintager, our one and only Jeff Eller, is debuting on the national stage with his podcast. Shouldn't you be one of the first to come in and see him and see what you have with What's It Worth? Can you sell it? Do you want to sell it? And should you sell it? Only the antique vintager can tell you such things. So come and see us at 637 Durst Avenue East. Call first for your appointment. 864-229-6613. The antique vintager, Jeff Eller, is in the building. Oh, that's right. Looks like we're back right here on WCRS. Those were the days, my friend. Back when things were a lot different, right, Jeff?
That's true.
Yep, that is true. But that's the way they are in 2019. We got to just go with the flow, right?
Oh, we are the flow.
We are the flow. There you go. All right. So we were talking about pocket watches on our latest podcast here today. And what did you want to talk about as far as the aspects of gifts and as far as what makes them special and, I don't know, whatever else you wanted to talk about, Jeff?
Well, the neat thing about pocket watches, you can have the exact same watch and it'll have 7 or 8 different casings. Meaning the outside of the watch can have a totally enclosed watch, which is called a hunter's case. Mm-hmm. It has a slightly open for the dial, which is a 3/4 hunter's, mm-hmm. Half hunter's. Then there's the open face, and then there's the outside shape. You have them as an octagon. You can have them as a literally a half circle type thing. You can, most of them, of course, are round. The works that usually completely fill the case. Unlike the modern watches, you open up the back of a monster wristwatch, and the works are the size of a nickel.
So they got all this extra just around it, but the watch itself is very small.
Right. And the early wristwatches, they were 7 jewels, because that was the size of the lady's watch that was converted over to be a man's or lady's wristwatch.
Well, we have had some, I don't know if we have any right now, where literally one could unhook it from the wrist and convert it back to a pocket watch.
Well, out of the about 400 watches we have in pocket watches, I have about 6 or 7 of those.
Yeah, that's...
they were de rigueur all the way up to the early 30s.
Yeah.
Once they got to the 1930s, there was no emphasis to disconnect a wristwatch to go back to being a pocket watch.
So that was a conversion aspect that was really, really cool. But as you said, after the 30s, they really didn't do much on that. So as far as a gift in today's world, Why are pocket watches popular?
Well, number one, it's a heritage type thing. I mean, it reminds people of the quality production of Americans' workforce at an earlier time. But the biggest thing is, it is a nostalgia of having something the grandfather could have. Now, maybe he had one watch and six grandsons.
You had to work to be the favorite, right?
Right, you had to work to be the favorite or the first person to find him.
Or maybe you're the oldest. Sometimes it was just the fact that you were the oldest, right?
Usually that was the fact.
But today's equal world.
Yeah, which is not. We have a lot of grandparents' sales, especially grandfathers coming in and buying enough of them, virtually identical to what they have for whatever number of grandchildren they have.
So they can each have one.
It's a heritage type thing. Now, when you buy a pocket watch, you're a custodian of it. You're not necessarily the end product owner of it. You're a custodian for whatever period of time that you deem that it's yours. And then it's handed on down into the family. And hopefully they cherish it as much as you do.
That's right.
And if they don't, there's people like myself standing there ready to buy.
Now, how many pocket watches do we have on hand?
A little over 300.
Over 300 pocket watches. That's
right.
A lot of pocket watches.
A lot of pocket watches, and I probably got another 50 out being rebalanced and thoroughly gone through, cleaned, timed.
Yeah. You know, that is the thing about it. When we sell a pocket watch, it's going to be in perfect working condition.
As perfect as we can make it.
That's right. So if you are in the market, if you are thinking you want to have more than one pocket watch on hand, that you've got more, maybe you've got two grandsons, you'd like to do something. Now, what about ladies' pocket watches? Because the ladies' watches were always the smaller ones that you could wear around your neck.
And they still are. And period type of weddings, this is the type of jewelry that's put on after the wedding and at the reception.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So those are smaller. Now, one of my questions, and I never understand this as I'm typing up and putting these up, are the different sizes of the watches. They don't call them like it's a half an inch, an inch and a half, or 2 inches. They call them 16S, 17S.
It was a standardization that was actually started in England, and we just carried it over here once it came here. And it originally came back to monetary sizes, how big the coins were.
Okay. So that's all that really means. And there's a lot of different variations in the weight of the pocket watch.
Oh, yeah. The more mechanically inclusive that it is, meaning that if it had a feature for seconds as well as minutes, then it has additional mechanics in it. If it had a feature of seconds and day date, then it had a lot more mechanics in it, and it changed the weight of it. And the fact of whether it's a gold case, a nickel case, a silver case, that changed it, or a heavy gold fill. They made cases called rolled gold.
Rolled gold.
A rolled gold case is gold on two sides of silver, and then it's formed just like gold would be. And it's actually, if you melted it down, it's compared to 4 to 6 carat gold.
Why did they do that?
Cheap.
To roll gold on either side of silver was cheap?
Yep.
Sounds like it's a lot more labor intensive.
Well, labor was cheap.
Labor was cheap. Okay.
Labor was cheap. Precious metals didn't change.
Wow. Okay. So they're great for an inheritance, for a heritage piece.
Right.
But a lot of gals like to give a pocket watch to their groom, to their future husband, as a memento of their wedding.
And that's a nostalgia piece, again. That was one of those things that the wedding, the marriage is supposed to last forever, and these watches were usually guaranteed for 25 years or more. Mm-hmm. Virtually forever.
Forever. Well, that's where we sell a lot of them too, is for weddings as a wedding gift to the groom. So
that and graduations.
And graduations too.
Yes.
What is the significance of it for graduation?
Well, at one time, before 1960, you would have graduated. Somebody would have gave you the watch, the family. And other people would give you a watch chain. Then other people would give you the fobs on the watch chain, which usually had your alma mater's insignia on. Or if you were a Mason, it had the Mason insignia. You could look at, my grandfather used to say, you could look at a rich man's watch chain and know all about him.
Now, the watches were usually given for college graduations, is that right?
That is correct.
Yeah, okay. All right, so.
Even then, a watch took a good deal part of an average working man's weekly salary. 1 week would not buy a lot of pocket watches.
And yet they were so desired that people did this.
Well, they were desired. Yeah.
That is so awesome. I also, just before we go on to pearls here, one of the other things is that women ended up making the same amount of money as men when they were working in the factories with the watchmaking. Isn't that correct?
It was the most progressive industry we had in the United States.
The most progressive industry.
Yep. Women were paid exactly the same on the production lines.
Amazing. What happened?
Well, actually, what happened was that women around 1910 became more dominant in the watch-type factories. They were quicker, and let's face it, capitalism goes with what can produce and produce it cheaper. Mm-hmm. And if that's women, by gosh, we don't have women.
But they still earned the same amount of money as a man. They just were quicker, so therefore they were producing them at less cost.
And they usually got paid a base plus production. And in 1900, the highest average wages in the United States was, again, watchmakers.
See, who knew that fact? Only the vintager knows things like this. Only the vintager.
Here's the other thing. In World War I and World War II, the watch production, they were the ones that came up with the mechanical bomb sights.
I knew you were going to say bombs. I just knew it.
And they came up with the mechanical, which was kind of a computer arrangement for naval gunfire, for to be able to aim the big guns.
You know, we just don't think about the importance of something like watches, do we?
Right.
In the scheme of things. That's what makes this so interesting, is that watches really influence, kind of like the trains. And we just had the 150th anniversary of the Transcontinental Railroad. And I was reading it was akin to turning on the internet.
Very same.
Putting
very
the same. Spike down so they could go from east to west and west to east.
When the British finally took over India, not by gunfire, but by bribe, and did well at it. One of the things they distributed was watches. And people don't realize that the Indian rail network is the largest in the world. Hmm. And their trains do run on time.
Wow. Just so many cool aspects that we just overlook and don't even realize in today's world. We're so absorbed in where we are and what we're doing and where we're going. Now, just out of curiosity, Jeff, how have you found that, you know, since we have our cell phones, a lot of people think, oh, I don't need a watch. What are you finding?
That cell phone is replaced every 2 or 3 years, sometimes even less than that. That pocket watch is yours for life.
Pocket watch or wrist watch?
Either one.
Yeah.
Yours for life. If it's a mechanical marvel. It's not just a piece of equipment or a piece of jewelry. It's a marvel, and it's yours for life.
So, well, are people coming back to watches? I guess that's really the question I was asking.
There's an element that I've started shifting back. Part of it is this green movement, and that's given it a little emphasis. The other part is that you have the older, the baby boomers trying to...
Baby boomers?
Yeah, boomers? Baby boomers.
Yeah.
Trying to initiate a quality of nostalgia within the young people. Mm-hmm. And that's one way they're doing it. So, yeah, it's coming back.
Well, I think that's neat. You can have your cell phone, and it certainly is very, very accurate. Now, what about watches, pocket watches, and their accuracy?
Well, they'll never be as accurate as a $9 quartz.
Okay.
All right. However, that when they get down to a minute or 12 seconds a day, that's as accurate as most people will ever need.
You're right.
And the other thing about it is all the rap guys either have the huge wrist watches or they have pocket watches.
Yeah. So you can see them, and they certainly are stylish, and I would highly recommend that you come look at them right here at the Antique Vintager. Now, also, I understand you're going to be out at the gun show this weekend with pocket watches.
I will be.
Pocket watches, you've got some swords. Jeff's all choked up right now. Some pocket watches, you've got swords, you've got a bunch of things that you're going to be taking out there to be able to talk to people about.
I think it's always fun when you have like-minded people around you.
Right, exactly. So if you are out at the gun show, make sure you stop by and see him at the gun show out there at the farmer's market. That will be Saturday from 10 to 5, and Sunday, is it 9 to 4? Is that right?
Yes. I'll be the only one in a big clown outfit with the red nose and face. No.
You're going to be wearing the red nose from Walgreens to promote childhood, getting rid of childhood health issues. I think that's awesome, Jeff. I think that's awesome. Okay.
I won't be in a clown outfit.
Darn, I was hoping. All right, anyways, we are here. We're talking with the one and only vintager, Jeff Eller. Since we were talking about wedding gifts and anniversary gifts and how great these are, I thought we should just touch on, as we go towards the top of the hour, about pearls. Pearls are just that great anniversary and traditional wedding gift.
Well, it was a traditional graduation gift in high school because... Yeah. The people were going out to work or going out on to college or whatever, but most of them were going out to work, at my age at least. And pearls were required as part of an office decor type thing for young ladies that worked in higher-end offices around the world. They wore pearls and you wore heels, not real high heels, but you wore heels. And pearls were perfect with sweaters, blouse. They were just a perfect thing to wear because they were never out of style. And they've come back from the early 2000s where they had a swan sign there for a while. Now they're back. They're needed for brides, the bridesmaids. I mean, we do a lot of multiple strands for bridesmaids lately. And I think that's a good thing because pearls is something that they can always use.
Well, you know, the saying is when you don't know what to wear, wear pearls.
Right.
Yeah, if you go into an event and you're not sure how you should dress, if you put your pearls on, you'll be perfectly, perfectly dressed. Now, one of the things I wanted to cover is with the... tariffs and everything, and you were talking about some of the cyclones that have been happening. Pearl prices could be on the rise.
Pearl prices have a high probability of being on the rise. The Kobe sales have already happened, but you can look for next year. They're already lamenting how the farm productions were disrupted almost across the oceanic part of the world.
So that, you know, the pearls that come out of the ocean, they have been, they've destroyed the farms, literally.
Right.
Yes. Yeah. So that means the prices are going to go up. Now, with the tariffs that are going on, how is that going to affect? I think they had tariffs on them around Christmas time. I think we were experiencing some of that when we wanted to buy some.
I think the tariff at Christmas was about 15%.
Right.
Now they're talking about 30-35% this coming year.
That's right. So if we've got a lot of, what shall we call it, old stock, stock that we've had on hand.
We have old stock that we have.
Right.
We have new old stock from a couple stores we bought out.
Mm-hmm.
And we have two stores coming in that have old, old stock.
That's right. Now, the pearls are, you know, does it matter whether they're old or new when you
long
buy them?
As long as they've been kept out of the sun. And as long as they've been kept at a temperature less than 80 degrees, they're fine.
Yeah. You know, and the other thing that a lot of people we've seen over the years, these are just some pearl tips. Don't put your pearls on and then spray your hair with hairspray.
Nope. Pearls come off first, go on last.
That's right. So
that's the but that's always been the cry.
Right.
But
a lot of people don't know that in today's world because we don't get a lot of training in all these type of things.
Well, I think that for girls goes along with the guys' things of not knowing how to change a tire, not knowing the how to treat your jewelry. How many girls that we deal with are women, young women, do not know how to treat their jewelry.
Well, I think that comes from the standpoint of we want to be able to wear all our stuff all the time and not really matter what we're doing. If we're out there mixing concrete and we've got an opal ring on, so what?
Means that we have additional business to replace the opal.
That's right. It does matter. You do. And in the days of old, they used to only wear their jewelry on Sundays.
Oh,
or special
yeah.
occasions.
My mother and my grandmother and aunt all had Sunday jewelry.
Sure.
Yeah.
So as you move forward here, taking care of your jewelry, I like to say, you know, when I go home, I always take all my jewelry off. I don't need to be wearing it because I'm not going to be doing anything. So that takes it out of washing dishes, cleaning, all that kind of stuff. And that's a good thing. Yes, every once in a while I do, Jeff. Don't look at me like that. I was just making a suggestion.
I was trying to think back when that used to happen.
Yeah. Okay. But anyways, but people don't always take it off and take care of it that way.
No. It used to be when they had those herringbone chains, people would come in with them looking like a fuzzball because they'd slip in them.
Yeah. So treat your jewelry with respect. But as far as pearls, great anniversary gift, great wedding gift. Even if you already have a strand of pearls, add another strand to it. I love to wear two or three strands together, and they don't all have to match.
No, that is the style nowadays.
Sure.
Used to be they had to match.
That's right.
But not now.
And real quick, what's the difference between freshwater pearls and Akoya pearls?
All Akoya pearls are raised in seawater. Freshwater pearls are, as they say, in fresh water, mostly brackish water, but still fresher. And Akoyas are going to be older. The nacre's going to be thicker on them. They're going to be a lot more durable than freshwater, except for the big sizes.
Okay. So if you have freshwater pearls, they don't usually have as much nacre, therefore they can wear out. So you want to be even more careful with those.
Right.
Exactly.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, the
they're not always round.
No. Well, the freshwaters are not always round.
That's
either.
What I meant. The freshwaters are not round, yeah.
But the big ones on the freshwater are pretty thick nacre and can wear a long time.
That's right.
They used to say you don't wear your pearls when you wear your wools, because wool has had enough abrasiveness that it would...
Could scratch the pearls?
Yeah.
Wow, I didn't know that one. See, every time you sit down and talk to the vintager, you can always learn something new. So, Jeff, how have you enjoyed this today?
Oh, thank you, Ann.
Enjoyed having you on the air today. It's good for you to...
I enjoyed it.
Good for you to get back doing a few things on the air, Jeff Eller, the Vintager.
Yeah, I can breathe better, so yeah.
It's been tough to get back to doing things, hasn't it? It's only been a month. We keep forgetting since his last surgery, but...
Yeah, it's been a long month.
It's been a long month, that's right. So Jeff is here this afternoon, and he's going to be here hopefully a lot more. He has been recovering from this last surgery and doing great, and so it's great to have you back on the air to do a podcast. The Vintager is in the building. Thanks for coming by, Jeff Eller.
Thank you, Ann.
All right, this is WCRS right here in Greenwood with another edition of the Antique Vintager podcast right here on WCRS in Greenwood, South Carolina. Bye-bye, everybody. We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Antique Vintager. Make sure to visit our website, theantiquevintageremporium.com, for video clips and pictures of the show, as well as lots of merchandise. Jeff also looks forward to your questions and comments. While you're on the website, theantiquevintageremporium.com, don't forget to sign up for email notifications. Tune in next week for The Antique Vintager. Bye-bye.